Hello, Brady.
Hey, Jeff.
Hi
Jeff
there.
and Jeff.
Nice to see everyone.
Together, we're going to start a band called Jeff Leopard at the end of it.
All right.
I don't know what we're going to play yet, but I have a pint.
Okay. Let's
Recording
see
in progress.
Okay. That's a good thing. And scrolling through, looks like we've got plenty of people here. Although I just lost my video.
You want to click on the
view. There we go. We'll try that. Okay. All right, folks. We're ready to begin our monthly meeting of the full IWMA board. Welcome, everybody. We will begin with the roll call, please.
Mr. Enns?
Here.
Mr. Hammond?
Here.
Mr. Heller?
Here.
Ms. Marks?
Here.
Mr. Newton?
Here.
Mr. Robert?
Here.
Mr. Storton?
Here.
And Mr. Burbeau?
Here.
We do have a quorum.
Okay. And actually, it looks like we have everybody, correct?
Correct.
Very good. Okay, we will proceed to the Pledge of Allegiance. Please join me in saluting our nation's flag. Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Okay. All right, at this time we will proceed to public comment for items not on the agenda. Sasha or Barbara, do we have anybody for public comment?
This time, if a member of the public wishes to make a comment, you may press the raise hand button found at the bottom of your screen. Or if you're on the phone, you may press star 9. I am not seeing anybody for public comment.
I am surprised we did receive, I think everybody received an email from Janine Rands regarding AB 1276. I think Pablo may address this topic during his executive director's report. In any case, we will move on from public comment. We'll move on to the consent calendar, items 4 through 8. Let me see if there's any member of the board who wishes to discuss or pull any item on the consent agenda.
Charles, if I could, I have a question on item 8.
Okay, Keith, do you want to just address that question and then include it in a motion, or should you want us to proceed with a motion for the remaining items?
I was just reading the item and it did say direct staff to prepare additional amendments as specified, so I didn't know if this was a time to add some thoughts on that item.
Okay, well, let's go ahead and
certainly. Oh, I'm sorry, President Barbeau. Certainly, Mr. Storton can ask questions and receive staff comment without pulling an item.
Okay, that's fine. If we're going to have a lengthy discussion, I thought we'd proceed with the rest, but that's fine. We'll pull that. Before we do that, though, let's see if we have any public comment on any of the items on the consent agenda, items 4 through 8.
At this time, if a member of the public wishes to make a comment on items 4 through 8, you may press the raise hand button found at the bottom of your screen, or if you're on the phone, you may press star 9. And I am not seeing any hands raised for consent agenda.
Okay. All right. Then, Keith, why don't you go ahead with your question for item 8?
Thank you very much. I was just reading through the new policy, and I appreciate the changes that have been made. And I know we created this handbook a little while ago, just because of some lack of accountability issues that had previously happened with the organization. So I think one of the concerns that had come forward was some of the language that was removed, and it stated the executive director shall report at least quarterly or more frequently as necessary to the board or a duly appointed personnel committee of the board on the status of personnel issues and relations with the IWMA. And I was just curious, I think this language arose because of some of the lack of oversight by a prior manager over an employee. But I was wondering if there was a way to address that language in some kind of form that allows the executive director to come to the board or perhaps even the executive committee during a situation where an employee may face termination under the scope of a closed session or something like that, just to create that backup there for the director to have a place to go to. That was just my comment and question.
Okay, I'm gonna defer to Pablo on that, but I wanna point out for others on the board that the language Keith is referring to is at the top of page 33 of your agenda packet, and it's language set to be deleted. I didn't know that we had a personnel committee. We don't have a sitting one. So I took it this was something we didn't actually do or hadn't been doing recently. But Pablo, could you address Keith's question?
Yeah, certainly both with respect to the proposed deletion as well as to some thoughts on additional direction that might help with replacement language. And so in reviewing this, the employee handbook overall, I saw this particular language. I had the understanding that even though it directed the executive director to report to the board on a quarterly basis, that in fact it really hadn't ever been done. The handbook, it was originally adopted in 2020. And it requires me to get input from legal counsel on proposed changes. And so the course of events that led to this deletion was that I sent legal counsel this exact language in an email, and I said, please provide me with the closed session description so I can talk with the board. And not surprisingly, the response was, you can't talk to the board in closed session on such general language. And so in effect, it hasn't been done since originally adopted. And to do so of this nature in an open session, would be inappropriate because of it's so broad in language. And so I just went with the idea of a simple deletion. I think that Director Storton's comments are good in terms of what is it that we might be able to do to help ensure that the executive director does report to the board in a timely manner on such items that are appropriate. And so I think additional direction I have two items specified, but additional direction for executive director to work with legal counsel and craft some language. And my thought was that the executive director should immediately report to the board on issues of significance. What I didn't have a chance to do with legal counsel is to look at the Brown Act and identify what areas are we authorized to talk to the board about in closed session. But look at what the statutes allow and then craft some language so that the executive director has an understanding, is known, is directed by the board to report immediately on issues that are significant enough that they are allowed in closed session. So I think that that's all doable. So that's a little history on why the deletion was proposed and some additional direction that I think would be good from the board at this time.
Keith, does that help clarify that for you?
It does. Perhaps Mr. Minery can provide us, in order to do that, do we just, how do we move forward with helping create that language at this point, since it's just on the consent agenda?
Well, if I might, because we need to come back to the board on other edits as well. The general direction at this point in time, I think, would be good. And then I'd work with legal counsel in order to develop a proposal and bring back to your board when we bring the other edits back as well.
Okay. I appreciate the language that was there and was changed. I just noticed that is something that stuck out to me. And so I would be in favor of creating some additional language to help define that assistance to the executive director.
Of course.
I think it's good that we have then that, Pablo worked with Jeff on any subsequent changes. What's good thing is happening here is, Pablo's going through all of these kind of policy things that exist and kind of cleaning them up. And, I think a lot of organizations, I'm sure all of our cities have certain policies and stuff that are out of date or contain things that never occur in practice. And so I'm glad that he's looking these things over, but in this kind of change, changing the language of a document like this, it can always raise issues that need to be further addressed. and, you know, create a need to bring back further changes at another time. So, any other questions on this issue or any other item? I would note on item 7 that, you know, this is our monthly re-ratification of this resolution. At some point in time in the future, we will need to discuss our meeting status. But at this point in time, it's clear that there's still enough public health recommendations out there to be careful, maintain social distance where possible, you know, wear masks where necessary, et cetera, that we're certainly justified in re-ratifying this resolution. Okay, there's no further questions or comments regarding consent agendas, and there was no public comment. I think we're ready for a motion.
Chairman. Director Marks has her hand up.
Okay, I'm sorry, Jan, I did not see that. Go ahead,
Jan. Yes, I'd like to move the consent agenda with direction to staff to clarify the language that Mr. Storton brought up and when it comes back to us.
Okay.
Hammond, second.
All right, we have a motion by Jan Marks, second by John Hammond. Any discussion? Okay, let's call the roll.
Ms. Marks?
Yes.
Excuse me. Mr. Hammond?
Aye.
Mr. Heller? Excuse me, Mr. Enns?
Yes.
Mr. Heller?
Yes.
Mr. Newton?
Yes.
Mr. Robert?
Yes.
Mr. Storton?
Yes.
And Mr. Burbeau?
Yes.
Motion passes unanimously.
And Robert, it's good to see you out of your car.
Yeah, that was a mistake. Thank you.
No, that's fine. That's fine. Yeah. You look more comfortable here, though.
Yeah, fortunately, we can do that.
All right. We will proceed to our regular agenda. First item being item number 9, a meaty subject, our status update on the ratification of Joint Powers Agreement Amendment and consideration of proposed edits. As you all know, we voted last time 6-1 to approve the draft JPA amendment and send it out to the cities. Scott Newton, as the representative of Pismo Beach, is the one who voted no. And Scott, you could probably tell us more about that. And Pismo, we thought as a result of that, it would be good for Pismo to perhaps look at this amendment first. And PISM, and I don't know if you've had any formal discussions in terms of with your council, but I know you've provided some potential alternative language. I suspect this could be a very meaty discussion. I'd like to turn it over first to Pablo to describe where we're at. And Jeff Minery, you could weigh in if necessary as well.
Certainly, President Barbeau, and in the staff report, I made sure to be very concise and include the edits from Pismo, as well as some alternative language associated with Article 7 on the limitations of authority, which I'll be glad to respond to questions on, you know, the board members might want to ask me about. But in two areas, I think that, you know, really the discussions are sort of twofold. One is substance of the edits and where the board would like to go. And then second is the process, because from my general discussions with many of the participating agencies, I threw out a whole bunch of different questions on process oriented. And the general impression that I have is that some agencies, and we have some correspondence from Oceano that was received today, would like to see it on their agenda for some additional consideration. But other agencies are less inclined to want to have it as a comment discussion at their city councils or board, and instead wants to see IWMA, you know, work through what the outstanding issues are. So the approach and the process, I think, is important for your board to discuss as well. Overall, I hope that the board recognizes that even though there was a vote last March, that having edits discussed at this point in time really is not unusual when we get a lot of agencies together, that I think that the discussion through it should be good, that, you know, there's always some hope that we were ready to go and have the JPA adopted, but in reflecting on the process where the board directed the development of the amendments through the ad hoc committee with lead from legal counsel, and then it came to the IWMA board, and although there had been a lot of discussions at city councils at the end of 2021, there wasn't really an update at this point in time with the city councils. So I don't find it all that surprising that there was still an outstanding issue or two at this point in time. And hopefully the board as a whole recognizes that we are at the point where we're getting focused on, you know, the last couple issues. And so general comments, and I'd be glad to answer detailed questions during the board's discussion.
What I'd like to do is, and I see a couple of hands raised, I do want to point out the two issues were raised by Pismo Beach in particular, one being representation of the CSDs. The draft JP amendment called for or allowed for adding an additional seat on the board for CSDs so that they would have two seats. And it would bring the total board membership to 9. And you know, that was brought up and discussed in the ad hoc committee. If I recall correctly, John Hammond, you thought it was a good idea to have 9, to have an odd number of directors. I, and I think some others, felt that it was fair to have 2 CSD seats because of the large population they represent. And if Los Osos is to rejoin and become part of this, and I think that is scheduled to happen, correct, yes, Pablo? That Los Osos would become part of the mix, would bring the CSD population to 60,000, which would be well over that of our largest city, and that they just, out of fairness, they deserve 2 seats. However, to be brutally honest, from a political standpoint, I don't know that any city is going to die on that hill on behalf of the CSDs. I mean, I personally think it's fair, but I don't know that, I don't believe my city would withhold its vote for ratification for that purpose. But so that is one issue, is the CSD representation. And the other issue is limitation on authority in Section 7. And I do see hands raised, but I'd like to do is perhaps have Scott Newton, as the representative of Pismo, you submitted language, a specific sentence or two regarding suggesting some limitations on the IWMA's authority. So could you discuss that perhaps first, Scott?
Yes. Do we want to treat this as 2 separate items, one on the second CSD vote and get past that?
Well, sure. I'd like you to, if you would, you know, explain the rationale. Yep. For opposing the second seat, and then explain the rationale of and the language you propose on the other item.
Surely. So on the CSD vote, you know, part of the county leaving, they had 1 vote out of 13. When the county leaves, they now have 1 vote out of 8. So their voice has actually been strengthened with the county leaving. And then the other part of that is with SB 1383 kind of being our primary focus now, we also have to recall that a bunch of the CSD areas are going to be exempt from these requirements. So 1383 is our primary focus, and it doesn't always apply to them. I don't see the need to give them a second vote. And the notion that we do it based on population then almost gets into another discussion that opens up of, is that unfair to SLO? Is it unfair to Paso based on their populations? You know, or does Pismo get a 0.25 vote? And regarding an odd number, the odd number vote really shouldn't be a factor because, you know, with the GPA, we should be having consensus in almost every vote anyway. We shouldn't have 4-4 votes. If it's a 4-4 vote, it should fail anyway. Having the tiebreaker really should not be the issue, let alone the fact that what happens in the future if we have other municipalities join or leave the IWMA.
Thank you, Scott. I would point out that in regard to your comments regarding the exemptions from 1383, those are almost exclusively applied to the much smaller CSDs that are not represented on this board and are not participating agencies, because they have the low population density that allows them to achieve those exemptions. And that essentially all of the CSDs that are participating agencies are not exempted from 1383 because they're, you know, densely populated. And I totally follow your logic regarding eight, that it's not a bad thing to require 5 out of 8 votes to make something happen, because we shouldn't have a lot of controversial votes. Anyway, having made those comments, I'd like to see what other folks on the board think about the CSD representation issue.
Well, a point of order, Chair Burbo, if we could take each of these issues separately, I think that would prevent confusion and make our deliberation more clear. So are you asking for comments before public comment?
I'm asking,
or are you asking for questions?
I'm asking for board questions and comments on the CSD representation issue.
Okay.
And then we get board, we're going to split these into the two issues that PISMO raised, CSD representation and limitation on authorities. Two distinct discussions. We'll have board comments and questions, then we'll go to public comment, and then we'll reach conclusion. So anyway, if you have questions or comments regarding CSD representation, now would be the time. And I think you were first, Jen.
Well,
I think Director Enns was first, but it doesn't matter. Go ahead.
I will defer to Director Enns.
Okay, go ahead, Robert. I think Jeff was correct. You were first. Jan's at the top of my screen, and she's the one I see first. So thank you. Robert, go ahead.
Yeah, no problem. I'd like to ask, we have Templeton CSD wanting to make some comments. I wanted to see if we could make those during our discussion here, as opposed to in public comment. Jeff Brentz is wanting to speak, and board president there, Deborah Logan, is wanting to speak. And I believe they're both listening, and I'd like to hear from them before we make any other comments.
I think that's perfectly appropriate, Robert, especially and for you as the CSD rep to, as they say in Congress, to defer the balance of your time to those two. That would be perfectly reasonable. For purposes of this, we'll just accept their comments as part of your comments. So if they're online.
I believe they are. And maybe Barbara could let them in or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can allow them to talk. It looks like Deborah's hand is raised, so I'll let her talk first.
Okay, thank you, Barbara.
Okay.
Deborah, you should be able to unmute
also
yourself.
Sent a letter. Yeah, Templeton also sent a letter that's on page 73 of everybody's packet.
Thank you, and good afternoon. As Robert had indicated, my name is Deborah Logan, and I serve as an elected official on the Templeton CSD board and currently serve as its board president. Today, I would like to address the issue of the one particular change that is being proposed by the city of PISMO, and that is limiting the special district's representation to one person. And let me just say that Templeton CSD has no issue with the special district or the CSD representation that Mr. Robert Enns has provided in the past, and that what we hope he continues to provide in the future. And we appreciate his representation. But my comments are strictly to the fact that with the county pulling out of the IWMA, in some ways, special districts lost a vote. The county was one representative or one avenue that special districts had, in addition to Robert Enns' representation. So now with the county withdrawing from the IWMA, special districts or CSD are limited to just one, and that's what's being proposed by the city of PISMO. So in November of last year, our board reviewed the draft joint powers agreement, which included the language allowing for two special district or CSD representatives on the IWMA board. And the TCSD board at that time voted in favor of that. It is now coming before this board, the changes proposed by the city of Pismo. And I think that having two representatives is more than fair. We're not asking for an equal vote as what is currently available to the eight cities that sit on this board. But there are 11 special districts. The population in those special districts come close to 70,000 members or persons. When you look at the combined population, that's more than multiple cities that serve on this board. We're not asking for equality. We're asking for fairness by having those two votes. This is the GPA is a long-term agreement. This is not something that is changed and won't probably be changed for many years to come. So now is the time to look at going forward and what that representation should look like. So there are benefits. I think having a tiebreaker vote is important on any board. So that's one of the reasons for it. Having that representation, but also just in fairness. So I ask that this board consider that when reviewing the changes that is being proposed. I would like to just say thank you for your consideration at this time. And Jeff Briltz, I know you're on the phone. I don't know if you have any additional comments that you would also like to make.
Thank you for your comments, Deborah. And Jeff Briltz, as the executive director of Templeton CSD, did you have any comments to add?
Yes, Jeff Briltz here, Templeton Community Services District General Manager. I hope you can hear me okay. I just want to echo our board president's comments. That is the position of our board of directors, that more fair representation was indeed sought by our board in continued participation with the IWMA. And then furthermore, just by way of background, most special districts did not inherit or activate their solid waste authorities until after the JPA was formed. And so when the JPA was originally formed back in the mid-90s, the county truly did represent our residents' interests. And then over a period of years, in Templeton's case, 2001, we activated these authorities. And really, we did view it as though the county's representative was also our representative. We had shared constituents at the time, and we could have gone to our county board of supervisors, actually any one of the five, for assistance on matters before the IWMA board. But with the county leaving, we really feel like our voice will be watered down otherwise. So really, again, it's not about equal participation, but just fair representation.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Briltz. Thank you for adding that fact that many of the CSDs did not have their garbage powers activated when the JPA was created. All right. Before we move on to board comments and questions, I wanted to see if are there any other CSD representatives, either elected representatives or executive or general managers, whatever you call yourself, on the line who would desire to speak on this, since it pertains specifically to you?
Eileen Bila has her hand raised.
Okay, and keep in mind, this is not just for general public comment. I believe right. Eileen is a member of Oceano. Yeah, so Eileen, go ahead.
You should be able to unmute yourself, Eileen, or Eileen.
Good afternoon, IWMA board. This is Aline V. I'm a director in Oceano and represent a representative on the IWMA. And I would also like to echo the former comments that I did state this fact about the proposed amendment to, you know, have two representatives. And we did not do a letter of support, but everybody on my board nodded in agreement that it was a fair thing to do. So I do hope that you will keep that, and it's a fair thing to do. And like was said before, that this is going to be a long-term contract agreement. So please do keep it as the way it was proposed with two votes, two members. Thank you.
Thank you, Eileen. All right. Is there any other, I'm sorry, Jeff Minner, you had a comment.
President Barbeau, thank you. I couldn't figure out how to raise a hand, but I would like to remind the board that what we're looking for here is the cities to agree. It's an amendment to an agreement that the cities are all parties to. And then what we'll ask for, though, is that the CSDs to be participate in the agreement. So ultimately, this amendment is up to the cities based on your discretion on what you've heard today.
I understand. Thank you for the reminder, you know, that this is the cities are the members, other than one CSD can be a member, but everybody, all the other CSDs are participating agencies if they elect to do so. Charles, so with that,
Charles,
yes.
Charles.
Yeah, I'm going to go back to you, Robert, because you had the floor until you ceded it to the others. So go ahead.
Okay, I just want to comment that, you know, we've had this discussion for quite some time. In the initial work, there was discussion of having two. It went to the from the ad hoc committee to the board, somehow back to the executive committee. And it wasn't until this late date and one city member decides to complain about it or make a change. And it seems like it's a little bit late in the game and maybe in the long run here, we could, while we're discussing this, hear from the other cities and see if it's what their feeling is.
Well, and I'd like to do that then and go next to some of the other city reps. I think actually, Jan, I think Jeff Heller was ahead of you. The importance of this is, of course, that under our currently structured JPA requires unanimous consent of the participating cities. So if one city has a particular issue with a particular subject, that's very germane, very relevant. So I'm going to go next to Jeff Heller from Morro Bay.
Thank you, Chair Barbeau. My comments regarding representation, I like Director Newton's comments very much and what City of Pismo Beach has submitted. However, I'm wondering, where does the executive committee stand on this? What are their thoughts? Obviously, don't want to blow the deal up, but on the other hand, I'd like to hear from the executive committee.
Well, I'll defer. Jan is next. I mean, I will tell you that we discussed it at the last executive committee meeting because, you know, Pismo had expressed their reservations or their opposition to this particular subject. So we discussed that, and, you know, from my perspective, and I think I mentioned it at the beginning, is I think in fairness, the CSD should have two reps, but it's not a hill that I'm going to die on. In other words, I'm not, for myself, and I think for my city, it's not an issue that we would let, lead to disapproval of ratifying the JPA. So that's just me. So okay. I'll defer now to Jan, and then I see Robert has anything to add. So okay. Jan,
thank you.
Does that answer you? Does that help you?
Jump it does. Out? Thank you very much. Thank you.
Okay. Jan?
Thank you. Well, I just wanted to start out by saying that I think the idea that population should dictate who is eligible to serve on the IWMA board it's just not how we're set up. We're not a representative board the way that the Board of Supervisors would be, where each district has to have the same population. What we're doing is we're providing municipal services. And under the Public Research Resource Code, the cities and the counties, the county and the cities are eligible to form the JPA for integrated waste management. It's, you know, Pismo has, according to the 2020 census, 8,072 people. And the city of San Luis Obispo has 47,063 people is in 2020. As a representative city of San Luis Obispo, I think the city of Pismo or Morro Bay, I think is the next one, have just as much right to have representation on our board as the city of San Luis Obispo. It should not depend on population. And in fact, it does not depend on population. So I can understand and sympathize with the wish to somehow be fair to on the basis of population, that maybe there should be more representation. But I think it points to a larger issue, which is how do we make sure that the CSDs have meaningful and significant input into the IWMA board and policies. And I think this can be accomplished. I think it requires more work on the part of our organization, but I think it can be accomplished without changing the JPA that was in place since 1994. So it's not a change. It's what we're talking about is maintaining, staying the course from 1994. So that's my take on it. I think we should have the CSD representative and the alternate certainly attending all these meetings, keeping up with all of the issues and being able to have input. And then if there's more we need to do, we need to do it. Then I had a question for Jeff Minery, because at one point, legal counsel had said that under the public resource code that we are allowed to have one CSD or district representative. And the code specifically, I asked Jeff Minery today, it's a PRC 40977 and 41821.2 specify that the districts that our JPA would be able to create eligibility for one district representative. Then I've heard from other people that, oh no, we can do anything we want. So I'd like to hear from, I mean, that's always a great argument, but right. I'm a lawyer, so I want to know from our legal counsel, what discretion do we actually have? Pardon?
So no, I think President Barbeau may I
explain it. Yeah,
please.
Yeah, yeah, the president's discretion. I think it's an important point, and I appreciate Director Marks asking the question. This came up at the ad hoc committee, and I said, just give me a chance, I'll work it out if we can. So it is true, the Public Resources Code identifies that a regional agency can have one special district as a member. I searched the legislative history to find the answer to that as to why that is. I cannot find it. There is nothing there. But there is a way that I worked that could manage that problem, and it's through a memorandum of agreement. That's how we crafted the draft JPA that you all saw. So is it possible? And there is one other agency that has two special districts. That's the County of Alameda. They go by Stop Waste. They have two special districts. I did run everything, the draft, the original draft with two special districts by CalRecycle. CalRecycle approved the draft amendment to the JPA, because I did not want this board to adopt and approve an amendment that would subsequently be rejected by CalRecycle. So can we do it? Yes, we can. We can figure out a way to do it. You have options. and you have authority to do what you want to do. So ultimately it becomes a political question. I'll answer any questions.
Exactly. And I think the point you made early in earlier conversation, Jeff, was that, I mean, you can only have one member from the CSDs as part of a regional agency, but you can have, you can allow multiple representation. But I'm curious.
Which is why, I'm sorry, President Barbeau, which is why everybody's identified as participating agencies. And so we worked around a little bit to accommodate the ad hoc committee's desire.
And I'm curious to hear, I don't see any other hands raised, but I'm curious to see how other members feel about the topic.
Charles, Robert Enns. Yes.
Okay, Robert.
As the other executive committee member,
right.
I just want to report that, one, I appreciate the comments that were made by Deborah Logan Templeton that she thought I was doing a good job, because that's the crux of this. To me, it's difficult to represent 10 or 11 different districts, and you just hope that you're doing a good job for everybody. So, and I think I expressed to the executive committee that I would appreciate having some help from the special districts and maybe an additional perspective. But I can side with Charles, your comment about it's not a hill to die on, and I think I expressed that to the executive committee as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Robert.
John, I have several things here for Pavel question wise that I'd like to get into, if you don't mind.
Sure.
You know, with regard to the CSD funding, does the individual CSDs help fund IWMA?
We don't receive funding directly from any of the agencies, but all of the agencies, including the CSDs, their populations pay through both the tipping fees as well as the solid waste management fee.
I'm not quite understanding what you said there. Yes or no?
Yes, all communities help fund IWMA.
So every rate payer pays, you know, the percentage on their bill, and every garbage truck from every jurisdiction, CSD or city, goes to the landfill and pays the tipping fee. So all communities pay into the, IWMA revenue stream.
Okay. I thought that's what it was anyway, but the other thing is, basically if, a particular CSD did not want to be under the IWMA, they can always do their own thing. Is that correct? As their own agency?
That is correct.
Yep. It's so strength in numbers. Strength in numbers is the best thing, you know, for all the CSDs to do. The other thing is, what I am not sure how handled right now, but through Robert Enns, which he's done an excellent job over the years, you know, representing the CSDs, in my opinion. Do you, Pablo, send our agendas out to each of the general managers of all the CSDs for review and comment?
Yes, we do.
Exactly. So in the past, it's up to them then to get back to their rep, which would be Robert Enns, you know, with input. And Robert, maybe a question to you directly. Do the different CSD managers reach out to you on issues and questions and direction that they'd like to see?
For the most part, no, but you see what happens when we come down to something to talk about. We get letters and I get personal phone calls. Jeff talk to me. So there is a mechanism when it comes down to something they're concerned about.
Right. Well, that's what they're supposed to do. I think, again, it's like a little known agency that is getting more popular, so to speak, with regard to impacting people's lives. And they were starting to wake up, I think, sometimes. I remember back in the day when we passed the plastic bag ordinance, you know, I remember seeing on KSBY, little known agency, IWMA, right?
Yeah.
So now we're getting into the point where with 1383 and everything else going on, people are going to start understanding that this is something that's going to involve them, which means, you know, their local representative needs to be informed and their voice is heard through you, essentially. And I spoke with, you know, Pismo too, directly on this. I'm okay truly with keeping it. And if they feel like they want to leave, then we'll be back to an odd number anyway. Right. So, you know, I think again, it's okay with PASO. We've talked about this with staff that keeping it as is not, again, a hill to die on with regard to forcing another seat. And just so long as though the communication lines are open through their representative, meaning Robert Enns, through their general managers and through their boards, I think we're fine. We should be fine at this point moving forward. So that was what I was trying to bring up. They do support IDMA in a way, and they do have a voice. So I'm good with it at this point. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Your comments are very important because I recall, you know, you originally endorsed the idea of two seats, partly to have, you know, an odd number on the board. Thank you for that. Keith Stortin, you have your hand raised.
Thank you, Robert. I too was on the ad hoc committee, and when we discussed the two seats for the CSDs, I thought we felt at the time it was appropriate and fair and equitable for the representation. I do think Mr. Enns does have some good arguments about the depth and complexity that he has to deal with a multitude of different types of CSDs. I'm a little confused as to the argument from Pismo as to why we would get to this point this late in the game after having many opportunities through ad hoc committee, through city managers meeting together to get to this point. And the arguments of strengthening another entity's voice, I don't necessarily see that as a bad thing. The discussion that CSDs are exempts from 1383 requirements isn't necessarily accurate. And if we agree that we're going to most of the time agree on consensus anyway, you know, does it matter how many we really have? I mean, really, the things that have been contentious for us are things above and beyond the state mandates. And we are now adhering to state mandates moving forward. I don't see much in the way of contentious split votes that are going to be confronting us. And now we're trying to bring some fairness and equity to really issues that are becoming, like John said, extremely important, more highlighted, and we're gonna have to deal with 1383 and other issues more frequently and constantly, and having an additional representative to provide that additional information flow and communication with constituents for understanding to me is huge. So I'm in favor of the two, but again, as part of a city, I would hope that Pismo would reconsider and realize there's a greater value to the strength in the numbers, but it's also not a hill that my city is prepared to die on either. But I really do feel that the two representation is much more beneficial. Thank you.
Thank you, Keith. Scott, you have your hand raised.
Yes. Getting back to equal representation, let me just reiterate one thing. When we said before, they were one out of 13, they represented a 7.6% vote of the total. With having them be one out of eight, they are now 12.5% of the total. They almost doubled just by losing the county. If you'd give them a second CSD vote, they would represent 22% by being two out of nine. And to me, that's not equitable to the rest of the members. They gained strength with the county actually leaving. And therefore, I do think it's fair.
Thank you. I think at this point, we've pretty much heard from everybody that wanted to speak. I think, you know, we probably have some honest disagreement about, you know, what's fair and right on it. But I think there is a consensus that we're not going to go to the mat on it. I mean, those of us who think it's fair and right to have two CSD members aren't probably not going to go to the mat on it. What I want to do, though, is two things. I think we have we need to allow for public comment. And I think specifically Will Clemens, one of our CSD executive directors or general managers, would like to speak. And then let's have general public comment. And then let's come back to the board and for a resolution. Sasha, can you let Mr. Clemens in? And then we'll see if there's anybody else.
Yes, I did.
Yes, thank you. Will Clemens, General Manager, Oceano CSD. I think you received the letter from our president and you heard another member of our board speak, as well as a member of Templeton's board. I think they said everything that I could say. I did appreciate the comments related to population. I think you have a city, Pismo Beach, that has roughly the same population as Oceano that has a representative. And we yet have to share one representative. Is that fair? I don't know. But as Council Member Marks brought out, we're providing municipal services and we provide the same municipal services as the cities. So from that logic, the 11 special districts perhaps should have 11 representatives on the JPA. So
that'd be crazy.
Wouldn't it? I agree. I don't think that would be the right solution either. So I think we had an excellent solution, two representatives. And my request would be for Pismo to change their position because it seemed that everyone else could live with that. But I know our general managers that represent agencies that provide this service feel strongly because we've had meetings. And our job is to provide options to our boards. And that's what we'll continue to do, is provide options to our boards. And, you know, when it comes to the services that IWMA provides, if we have options for others to provide those services, we may have to recommend that. And that's 70,000 population that provide the same funding stream that everyone else does to provide somebody to do those services, whether it's IWMA or someone else. So I think that's something to consider. We have a solution that I think is gonna make everyone happy. Why upset the apple cart at this late date? And that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Clemens. Okay, let's see if there's any other members of the public that wish to speak on this item.
At this time, if a member of the public wishes to speak, you may press the raise hand button found at the bottom of your screen, or if you're on the phone, you may press star 9. I do have one on the phone. Okay, caller, you should be able to unmute yourself. To do that, I believe you press star 6.
You're on the air.
Hello.
Hello, yes, we can hear you.
Did you get... Yeah, this is Dan Burgess. I'm the alternate. So I understand making a decision, and it's definitely up to you guys. But I want you guys to consider that if something ever happened to one of the CSD members, there's no knowledge transfer, and it does take a matter of time to get acclimated into exactly what your agendas are and what you guys are doing. So by having two members on there, I feel that we have one, fair representation for our population, and two, if anything did happen and somebody went on vacation or did whatever or quit for some unknown reason or got elected out, then you have somebody that's already stepped up and is on, can hit the ground running at that point. It does take time to acclimate into these difficult boards. So that's all I got to say. It is your decision, but that's just my opinion.
All right. Thank you, Dan. Okay, any other public comment? And if not...
I do not have anybody else for public comment.
Okay. Very good. Then we'll bring it back to the board for discussion. I do have a question for Jeff Minery in regards to this issue. Jeff, because right now we have an amendment that passed 6-1 last time, has been referred out. Nobody's formally voted on it. That's correct, right, Scott? Pismo didn't actually vote on this as a council, correct?
That is correct.
Okay. But I believe that you are representing a consensus, if you will, from Pismo Beach that it's been discussed internally there. Correct me if I'm wrong on that. But in any case, so the question for Jeff Minery is, so we have this out there. Now we have this particular issue and we'll talk about the other one. If we as a body go, okay, well, you know, Pismo won't ratify this as is, the rest of us, even though those of us who disagree, you know, aren't going to go to the mat on it. Should we actually amend the amendment at some point and then send it out to be ratified with one rep, or what's proper procedure there? Or should we just wait till we go through the second topic and see where we end up on that one?
That would be the easiest way.
Okay. Let's do that.
I'm joking. I would say that what we should do is, if we cannot agree on where you are right now, we bring this back to the board with two choices and then decide.
Got it.
Okay. But I think I have enough direction.
Right. Okay, then let's move on to the second issue that Pismo raised and submitted language on. And then for those of you following along, this is page 71 of the agenda packet. And in this, this is in regard to section 7, express limitation of powers. In the middle of that paragraph, Pismo submitted a specific sentence. I guess it's one sentence, two sentences. And Sasha, if you could pull that up and post that on the screen for people to follow along for ease of reference. And then what I'd like to do is ask Scott Newton to explain the rationale and perhaps the specific wording itself in terms of what and why you're suggesting that. And then when we move on, we also have some alternative language on page 72 of the agenda packet. So Sasha, could you pull up page 71 of the agenda packet?
Or Sasha, more clearly, I sent you this morning that the file share. It has both Exhibit A and Exhibit B on it, as well as some clean language on.
Give me 1 second, pulling it up.
Appendix A and B.
We move back and forth on appendixes and exhibits.
Okay. Let's just see. So. Here we are. Okay, so Scott, could you please explain the rationale and maybe the specific wording?
Absolutely. So the reason why the city of Pismo inserted this language was to make sure that, we've agreed that we're going to focus on mandates only, but to also make sure that our focus and our expenditures also mimic that by limiting our measures to that as well. So while we may be following mandates only, it doesn't mean that we could not perhaps overspend as part of still following mandates only. I'll give you an example. If we're required to do a certain amount of education and we exceed that amount of education by, let's say, tenfold, the question for the city of Pismo Beach, we don't want that. What we want is the power to exceed what the limited measures that are needed only within our city if we choose to do so on our own. So that's the basis for the language.
You added your second sentence in this language also, though, refers to an exception to the minimum may be approved by a unanimous vote of the board. And I'm reminded that every city in its resolution saying, yeah, we'd like to stay a member of the IDBMA, but every city said, get rid of the 8 vote requirement.
So the reason why this was put in, it was kind of addresses the part that was put in the language that was submitted by the executive committee, is the way you could go beyond this is if you had perhaps grant money. And so therefore we know that if this was so-called free money and you wanted to exceed the minimums, then the board could approve that. It would just require a unanimous vote.
Supermajority.
Yeah.
Yeah. But my point being that every city had kind of expressed a distaste for a supermajority vote, you know, they expressed a distaste for 8 out of 13, but here you're proposing a unanimous vote.
Correct. And that way it keeps your measures still limited to what's only required, but give you a way to go beyond that if perhaps you wanted to chase something like grant money or utilize grant money.
Okay, but yeah, my concern was the unanimous vote, that seems like that's something that all of the cities, including Pismo, had expressed an aversion to having supermajority.
Right, and that language could be changed, you know, with some work to better reflect that.
Okay, thank you for the explanation. I have a question to Paavo before we start to discuss it more. Because for me, one of the things that concerns me when we talk about this is I feel like it's overreach within a JPA, that these are sort of policy questions, because, you know, we in government, we frequently have, you know, state laws are not always that super clear. You have to work with regulatory bodies. I would see this setting us up for a lot of contests with CalRecycle. But my bigger concern would be when we say doing only the minimum, an example to me would be we have 5 or 6 household hazardous waste sites around the county that we, as the IWMA, operate for the benefit of our residents. I would gather that the minimum is probably 1. You know, that having 1 would meet the minimum of having a hazardous waste take-back program that our residents can reach. But having 5 is convenient. And having 5 also provides some equity of service, if you will, to the residents in our different jurisdictions. So it isn't, there's not 1 in San Luis Obispo and everybody else, you know, has to drive 30, 40 miles to get there, which would also lead more likely people dumping stuff on the side of the road. My concern is, and my question to staff is, what impact, you know, how would we be constantly interpreting what is the minimum and what, how would we handle this kind of language in deciding what the minimum is?
So President Borbo, again, from a staff perspective, establishing language associated with minimum work like this is challenging for us from a couple of different perspectives. One is the interpretation of regulations themselves. We have, in a general sense, only 2 types of regulations, ones that are prescriptive, and the regulations are telling us exactly what we need to do. Those are relatively easy, and an example is testing for water quality. There's a lot of very prescriptive requirements on testing for maximum contaminant levels in water supplies. Very prescriptive, very easy to understand. The challenge is that there are a lot of regulations, including the ones that we're looking at and including SB 1383, that aren't prescriptive, and staff simply doesn't have the ability to interpret. Ultimately, the interpretations are for the governing board. Interpretations in terms of how we're going to take regulations and move forward in program development. Interpretations of when local governments want to challenge regulators on how the regulators are interpreting the law. So let's take another step back, is that the state passes a law like SB 1383 and then directs CalRecycle to develop a whole host of regulations. Well, it's certainly not unheard of for a regulatory body to step outside of the state law. And so even CalRecycle and adopting regulations may not be entirely consistent with the statutes adopted by the state. The point being is that staff needs the legislative body to do interpretations, on what type of programs we're going to implement, and to do the interpretations as to how much money is going to be put forth in the budget for us to work with. And it's not really staff's role at all to do those interpretations. That's why we have, you know, legislative bodies to help us through those efforts. Case in point on SB 1383 is there's a lot of discussions right now regarding what is required on route reviews. And so it's being discussed at conferences, but we can't, staff can't interpret what the minimum work required is going to be in order to comply. There's another challenge that we envision at a staff level, and that is that on these non-prescriptive regulations, so the integrated waste management plan that we're following, that's a plan that CalRecycle expects us to comply with because we're the agency that adopted the plan, and CalRecycle says you adopted that plan, you better comply with your own plan. Well, we want to start talking about modifying that plan. We have to submit modifications at some point in time in the future to CalRecycle. And I do have a concern that if they're also looking at a JPA that says that San Luis Obispo County IWMA is only going to do minimum measures, how is CalRecycle going to react in a practical standpoint from the types of changes that we might want to put forward? So, you know, the ability for staff to interpret what is the minimum necessary to comply with the regulations is just very challenging for us. And that's why we turn to the our legislative body, your board, in order to make those decisions. Now, so on the one hand, where, you know, the strict languages of a JPA, that's a contract, and to incorporate some very strict standards that are hard to interpret in a contract is one thing, but the intent behind it, I certainly understand. And so that's where, you know, the language that I had crafted in favor of a policy is, you know, the genesis of the language. And the only analogy that I can really draw to is the analogy on the Prop 218 requirements that are in the JPA language itself. And those were proposed as part of, you know, the overall development of these amendments. And that one's was, from a staff perspective, we thought we could tackle it through the fee setting policy. And I think that's worked out great. So again, from a staff perspective, no challenges in terms of the intent, but as a legislative body, it really seems like those discussions are appropriate at the legislative body's level, and it's hard to see how we're going to move forward when it's in a JPA, because it just begs the question that if it's in the JPA, then we bring forward a budget, we're going to have to start proposing to shut down things like hazardous waste programs. So, you know, again, I think that's the best I can do in responding to the question.
Okay, thank you, Pavo. I want to go to Jan next. I think she did have her hand raised first, but also, Jan, you had proposed some possible alternative language that, Sasha, can you go to that? That's exhibit or appendix B. Yeah, there you go. And I believe the top thing is language you came up with, Jan, and you had your hand raised, so we'll go to you.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you. Let me just say that I agree that with Chair Bourbeau that this kind of consideration is belongs on the policy level, something for our board to consider. It doesn't really belong in the JPA. I've talked with staff, with Pavo and other IWMA staff, and there's a lot of anxiety around, is this minimal, is this not minimal? And they have to be the ones making that decision. I think the language that I'm happy with the staff language that's been submitted, but what I had drafted earlier says, when complying with state regulations and ordinances, work plans shall be implemented if deemed by the executive director as necessary for state compliance, acceptable to the community, and demonstratively cost-effective. Exceptions to this minimum standard may be approved by a majority vote of the board. So what that's doing is inserting the discretion of the executive director to make these judgment calls, interpreting the policy that the board has set and interpreting state law. And it to me, it's much more, it's an operational question. If, on the other hand, the board, our board, had to consider the myriad of activities that IWMA does, it's like upward delegation. I can just see our board meetings being consumed with, oh, is having one more hazardous waste station minimal, or is it not minimal, or, you know, what does that mean? I just think that I understand the impulse. My recollection, I haven't looked at our five-year plan that we approved prior to Mr. Newton's joining our board. But I think the five-year plan makes it pretty explicit in terms of state mandates only. And so anyway, that's my thought. I'm okay with the staff language as well. The main thing I want to do is make sure that our staff, our board doesn't get into this micromanaging kind of thing. We've just been through a lot of that with the whole series of actions involving the county's withdrawal from the IWMA. And I think we need to step back into a more traditional role of policymakers and trust our executive director to make the judgment calls that are necessary. But what does that mean, state mandates only? So thank you. That's all I have to say on that.
Thank you, Jan. I'm going to go next to John and then back to Scott. I would make this comment, though. I think, and I'm not going to put words into your mouth, Scott, but I think this concern arises from, frankly, we went through the whole issue with polystyrene ordinance. We agreed in our strategic plan that we would limit certainly the adopting of any ordinance to those that mandated to comply with state law. What I see here is an attempt to try to put some limitation on that into the JPA. And I understand that sentiment. And I'm open to discussing some wording of how to put some of that limitation in JPA. I'm very concerned about how far this goes. So John Hammond first, and then back to you, Scott.
Thanks, Charles. Yeah, I think Pismo, Scott, I think I understand what you're trying to do there. Although I think the intent here was maybe to cinch down staff's past history about expanding and doing a bigger program than really is necessary. I hear that and I agree with that. But again, I think it comes back to the fact that this board really needs to make the decisions. It's up to PAVO to give direction and options that we can also vote on and throw back to him saying, this is where we're going to go. And that would be regarding cost of doing a particular mandate, right? The conservative approach to meeting these state mandates, again, is at board direction, I think. And by putting language in here like this, I think we're clouding the water. I like the previous that we had set up. It's less is more sometimes, Scott. And I think, we're saying expressly limited to state mandated legislation, bottom line. And then it's up to the board then how we meet that on every item that's going to come up upon us. And by putting language in here, it kind of ties everybody down. I think, again, it'd be better just to go back, but I'd love to hear your further discussion on it.
Thank you, John. I'm going to go back to Scott and then Robert and then back to Jan.
Well, let me start off. I definitely understand everyone's concerns, and I do see the issues as well that you brought up. And I hope you understand that the impetus for bringing this up is making sure that as we do expend our funds, that we don't go way above and beyond. And even making sure that maybe the majority of members who maybe want to go way above and beyond don't force that on other members. So, but I will say, when I look at the staff option as written, I do think that's probably what I consider a happy medium that addresses our concerns and lets everyone know that, the IWMA is not about, just growing as an organization and spending perhaps every dollar it can find available.
No, I thank you. And that's for me, I'm thinking, I think I understand the impetus. I just was very concerned about the wording. And that, cause I think you brought a good example that is like the education program. It's like, okay, we have to have some form of education and outreach, but it isn't really spelled out anywhere clearly what that minimum is. But one could argue that, you know, we're doing more than that, but it becomes kind of a policy thing of what is, you know, what do we have to do? But we don't want to spend a ton of money. We don't need to, but it becomes more of an annual policy question when it comes to how much education and outreach are we gonna pay for. But I think it would always be good in those discussions to point out that, hey, we exist as an organization to meet state mandates and ensure that our jurisdictions can meet state mandates. Robert, you were next, and then I think Keith, or was Keith next? I'm forgetting. I think Robert was next, Keith.
Thank you, Charles. I just wanted to reinforce Jan's statement about this puts the board in a position of micromanaging, something I think we should shy away from. I really don't believe this particular language belongs in the JPA. Somebody said that. I think that the requirement that states mandate only is adequate for our JPA. We need to leave some room for our manager to do his job. And finally, I was just reminiscing about being a student in school, and the minimum is a D- letter grade. And I think we need to do a little better than that. So I'd leave that up to our general manager to not make us a minimum only or a D- student. And I would only ask Scott if the revised wording that staff put forward would be adequate for his concerns.
Yeah, I think Scott indicated that, but so Scott, think about that. And that's because it could be a good direction to go in. But I think next I'm going to go to Keith, followed by Jeff Heller.
Thank you. I do appreciate Mr. Newton's concerns in bringing this up. I think it's important that anytime we can be fiscally conservative and making sure we're using our money wisely is important. So I do appreciate the discussion. And I also appreciate the willingness to kind of look at the language that staff has provided. I think that provides a little more clarity. I think we do have to be cautious about wording, because if it does get too cumbersome, that will be the issue that creates the contentious votes and the difficult conversations. So I do too favor the staff's recommendations, and I appreciate the discussion.
Thank you. Thank you, Keith. Jeff Heller.
Thank you so much. I think we all want to, we are all concerned about costs spiraling out of control. It's difficult to define what we're actually getting for the money that's been spent. So I support Director Newton, and I'm glad that Pismo Beach and Director Newton has brought this forward. On the other hand, I think less language is better. I like the option discussed at the executive committee on April 1st. I would like to even condense it possibly more in this way by saying, when complying with state regulations and ordinances, work plan shall be implemented if deemed by the executive director as necessary for state compliance and demonstrative cost effective. Eliminate the last sentence regarding minimums, eliminate the acceptable to the community, because the board will be voting on these things anyway. So I'd like to really condense that. I like that message. It addresses the importance of cost effectiveness, which is Morro Bay's biggest concern. I support the mandate. I support the legislation, but I'm concerned that it's unfunded mandate, and I want to make sure that we're doing what's effective, no more, no less. The minimum word always is going to create problems, but I'd like the board to consider reducing that language as I just suggested.
Let me check my screen here. I like less wording. I am concerned actually though about the word if deemed by the executive director, because the board ultimately has to decide if, you know, what the budget should include or not include annually. So I'm actually don't particularly like that phraseology referencing if deemed by the executive director. I am open to the staff language. I think what staff's trying to say in this, it is more words, but what staff is saying in there is essentially, hey, we have to consider the minimum work required to comply with state mandates and regulations when we develop the budget and in our budget policy. So that's kind of saying, hey, we've got to focus on what the minimum is, but that doesn't preclude us from ensuring there's an equal distribution of services throughout our service area and or preclude us from doing more if we can get it through other funds. So while that's a little bit more wordy, I think several of you have indicated an acceptance of that. Do we have any further comment on that before we go to public comment? Let me defer to Pavo. I think he had a comment.
So with respect to, you know, the first option, if deemed by the executive director as necessary, that concerns me because we have seen, you know, in recent and early, you know, quite some years where the executive director of IWMA has operated under a broader authority. And so that language where it says if deemed by the executive director is necessary, I don't know how well that would really do in, you know, controlling an executive director when we want to make sure that we're looking at a fiscal conservative policy here. I'm uncomfortable with the executive director language there. And then, you know, with regard to, you know, more of the words that I have in my recommendation and everything, they are consistent though with these subsequent actions that are on the agenda today in terms of developing a budget policy. I found it a little bit striking that there is really no significant budget policies here at IWMA. And so I do think that the board needs to go down that path. And the benefit of the language that I proposed is that when it really comes down to whoever the IWMA executive director is going to be and the one after that and the one after that and the one after that, when they look to this express limitations of powers, it's pretty clear that they need to lay out for the board of directors options that are minimum work options. That ultimately, you know, it's the legislator, your elected officials, a determination of the future of IWMA. It's a very clear conservative fiscal policy. And I think it sends good language to future executive directors on what their marching orders are.
Charles?
So that's my final language.
Yes, go ahead, John.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I had that one same question. How about if we say something like this with regard to this paragraph? You know, when complying with state regulations and ordinances, work plans will be implemented as approved by the board as necessary for state compliance, acceptable to the community, demonstrated in a cost-effective way. The last sentence be removed completely, but basically we're putting the authority back on the board to make decisions after Pavo or whoever the director is gives us options to do so, correct?
Yeah, John, could you explain your suggestion more slowly?
Oh, okay.
And are you talking about amending the paragraph at the top of the page on the screen?
Exactly, yeah, exactly. That's what I was trying to get at. I think we're hung up on this a little bit. With regard to giving the executive director, you know, authority. And I think, again, it comes back to the board. So I'm going to, you know, delete if deemed necessary by the director, and I'm going to insert as approved by the board at that point. And then the last sentence with regard to, you know, approved by majority vote, delete that, which is what Jeff was mentioning. I totally agree as well. So keeping it simple, again, it's more just direction back from the board after options have been given to meet a particular mandate. And then again, it's always the board direction with, you know, how much we're going to spend the money on. So again, that comes back to that level again, and therefore keeping us cost effective or not, you know, based on the board's direction. But I think taking it out of the director's hands, I don't like that. Just what Pavo was mentioning, it gives him unlimited authority almost as to, in his eyes, to figure out how he's going to do something.
Okay. Thank you, John. I agree that I brought up item like the if deemed by executive director language, But I think going back to Pismo's original concern, that I think, you know, several of us appreciated the impetus of the concern, which is that we approach our budgeting with the minimums in mind, which is kind of what, you know, the staff language below was getting at. And I didn't see you kind of address that. So I'm concerned, how does Mr. Newton feel about that? Scott?
I do like the option prepared by staff, but also, you know, what's been in front of me for a few days, I've been able to review it. And as we kind of do this on the fly, it's a little more difficult sometimes.
I agree.
You know, and I always say, if you're editing during a meeting, you're probably doing something wrong. And so I could support the option prepared by the staff for sure.
Yeah, thank you. I could as well. I'm concerned. I'm for the minimal thing too, John. I could support what you just said, but I'm not sure what you said addresses the concern that Pismo raised. Whereas I think the language, you know, in red down below addresses it in the sense of saying, hey, the budget, you know, we shall have a budget policy that requires consideration of the minimum work required in the most, you know, efficient way possible, but that does not preclude us from ensuring we're providing an equitable level of service and doing more if we have the funding for it. So I don't know. I mean, I'm open to either one myself, but I'm concerned about what's going to fly. So any other comments, board members?
Yeah, I'm just throw back in there, Charles, again, the way it's more wordy in the lower paragraph is fine. I was trying to keep it simple by using the upper one. That's all. It essentially says the same thing with more words, I think.
Okay, let's do this. Let's go to public comment. Let's take care of that first, and then we'll see if we have any further board comment.
At this time, if a member of the public wishes to make a comment, you may press the raise hand button down at the bottom of your screen, or if you're on the phone, you may press *9. And I do have one for public comment. Hey, Janine, give me 1 minute and you can unmute yourself. Okay, you should be able to unmute yourself, Janine.
51 participants.
Thank you, board. I have some comments to the discussion that you've just spent time on. As a member of the public, I'm distressed at the multiple comments and recommendations today to only follow state mandates. This board has spent more than 3 to maybe 4 years of money, hours of discussion, and attorney fees to create our current quality siren ordinance. In 2012, county passed a plastic bag ban to reduce the amount of single-use plastic that goes to landfill. We're all aware that there's little to no plastic bags being recycled. Our county represents a unique geographic condition of having more than 80 miles of coastline that was outside of the cities. For this body to continue to say we will only follow state mandates is not respecting the hours and years that the public put in as we worked on the polysiren ordinance, as well as the plastic bags. We should be going forward and not backwards to taking care of our human health, ocean, beaches, public parks, and the wild animals that plastics affect. People that come to Slo County come from many parts of the state that have already implemented aggressive plastic measures. So let's please go forward. We have a place to protect. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Janine. Do we have any other public comments?
Do not have anyone else for public comment.
Okay, then I'm gonna bring it back to Jan Marks. Jan, you had your hand raised. I didn't see that, so I apologize because my own screen is only showing 4 people. at a time. So
I would like to, as to section 7, I would like to move that we accept the staff recommendation, that language. And if we could resolve that, that would be, yeah. I think that'd be fantastic. So I'd like to move that.
Thank you, Jen. I'm sorry, who was that second? Was that John Hammond?
Robert.
Okay, thank you, Robert. You sounded a little bit like John Hammond. do we have any discussion of that? And do we, if we do this in the form of a motion, do we need to do, we'll need to do the other thing, I suppose, in a motion as well. So let's go ahead, we're on topic here. Let's go ahead and if there's no discussion, we'll make a roll call on this. Does anybody have any further discussion before we do that, before we do roll call? Okay, if not, let's go ahead and do the roll call.
Ms. Mars, do you mind clarifying your motion, please?
Yes, I would like to move that we accept the staff recommendation for section 7.
Thank you.
As right here, I printed it out, as is on our website, okay?
Thank you, Jim.
Just a point of clarification, that is the one on page 72, correct? The option prepared by staff?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
Thank you, Ms. Marks. For the roll call, Ms. Marks?
Yes.
Mr. Robert?
Yes.
Mr. Enns?
Yes.
Mr. Hammond?
Aye.
Mr. Heller?
Yes.
Mr. Newton?
Yes.
Mr. Storton?
Yes.
And Mr. Burbeau?
Yes.
Motion
all right,
passes.
Thank you all. And very pleased we could reach a point of unanimity on that. And let's go back then and revisit real quickly on the issue of one CSD rep. Jeff, should we do a motion on that, vote on that, and then we'll wrap the two together as a as an amended JPA for referral to the jurisdictions?
Yeah, like I would appreciate to know where the board wants to go on that so I can wrap it all up.
All right.
So if I might, just based on the discussion of the board, the motion might be akin to approve the edits submitted by Pismo Beach regarding special districts representation.
Well, to be clear, I mean, the that particular language is not in the packet, but Pismo's suggestion was essentially to go with the original, not change the original JPA language to allow for two, but just to leave it the way it was with one. Is that correct?
I
think that's correct. That
Charles, I think that's on page 83. It shows section 4, which discusses the authorized districts, and changes were in blue. So
yes, that's correct, Director Hammond. So in the appendix D, there are a number of different spots that Pismo has provided, and those edits appear to reflect all the changes that are necessary as proposed by edit. So they are part of the agenda package.
Right. So everywhere that, like on page 77, there's a reference, and so everywhere where one became two, we would essentially be proposing that it go back to say one.
Yeah.
And we will have to entrust, so it's on page 83, there's a couple references. So we'll have to entrust that, Scott, you were thorough in identifying where this issue was mentioned.
President Barbeau, I would suggest that I work with you to incorporate all those changes.
Okay, so perhaps a motion would be that board approve changing the JPA amendment language back to reflect one CSD representative on the board in all the proper places indicated.
And statutory authority for those modifications.
And the relevant statutory authorities references. Okay. Somebody want to make that motion?
Hammond would so move.
Okay. Anybody want a second?
Second.
Okay. So we have a motion by John Hammond, second by Scott Newton. Do we have any discussion on that? Okay. Do we need, we already took public comment on this issue. We don't need to do that again,
yes.
Correct? So so let's go ahead and do the roll call then.
Oh, I have some, I'd like to discuss this if I could.
Sure, go ahead, Jeff.
I think the key issue here, if this JPA is gonna be long lasting and be effective with respect to its goals, that we need to do what we can to relieve the responsibility of one person. Obviously, Director Enns does a great job, but just in listening to him talking about the phone calls and all the work that he has to do to communicate with the other CSDs, it makes sense to me that rather than having just one, there'd be one plus an alternate, as suggested by Director Hammond and Director Marks, so that there is continuity, as one of the members who called in talked about. I think that's important. So I'm not sure that I can support the one only. I think it makes more sense to have one plus an alternate.
It does allow
for an alternate is already contemplated by the original agreement. So there will be an alternate.
Right.
And there is. Yes. That's who called in.
Right now, it's Dan Burgess. He called in.
Yeah. You muted, Jeff.
Thank you for that clarification. Cool. My mistake.
Sorry.
Yeah. I think your point to be taken, though, is that, perhaps we need to ensure that the alternate is, kept fully engaged and aware, and maybe can help spread some of that representational duty or burden that Robert has. But so we have
Charles.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you.
I've got to reiterate again, I think it's up to executive director to reach out to the general managers of all the CSDs to make sure they're fully understanding what's going on and to get that input back up to their rep, which would be Robert Enns currently. Or their alternate as well, if Robert can't make a meeting. So they're fully represented and we're all heard. I think that's really, really important.
Right. Correct. Thank you, John. Robert, you have your hand raised before we vote.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment that I'm going to vote against this, although I've said I could go either way. But representing the districts that did speak up on this subject, I'll be voting no.
Thank you, Robert. Okay, let's go ahead and do the roll call.
Hi, could we clarify the vote is to stay with the status quo of one district representative and an alternate. Is that correct? I want to make sure we know what we're voting on.
That would be effect. I mean, the motion was to amend the amendment to go back to having one CSD rep with an alternate.
Okay.
And changing the statutory references where relevant. Okay, so that's the motion. We have a motion by John Hammond, second by Scott Newton. Let's go ahead and call the roll.
Mr. Hammond?
Aye.
Mr. Newton?
Yes.
Mr. Enns?
No.
Mr. Heller?
Yes.
Ms. Marks?
Yes.
Mr. Robert?
Yes.
Mr. Storton?
Yes.
Mr. Burbeau?
I'm going to vote no, but as I said, I'm not going to die on that hill, so I'm going to vote no. So thank you.
Motion passes 6 yes to no.
So we have a follow-up item.
Okay, and then the follow-up item is, I believe, well, it's regarding them. From here, we're going to make these changes and then resubmit this out? Or did you have a comment?
Yes. And so after legal counsel, Mr. Meenery and I talked about this a little bit, we were discussing this idea that we know that all of the cities have to unanimously approve changes for the JPA to become effective. And it certainly looks like we're now in a position that we can anticipate, success on that. The question became, well, what do the special districts need to do? Because in looking at this issue, and Jeff, I'm going to ask for some help on this. The question becomes, well, it then becomes discretionary for the special districts one by one as to whether they want to approve it and continue to participate in IWMA, or as one of the representatives indicated, they need to start looking at their options. And so once the final city ratifies the JPA, it essentially becomes effective. And what kind of timetable then might the special districts have for their final consideration? The presumption should be is that the change in the MOA and the special districts are still going to be underneath the IWMA umbrella most immediately, but how should the special districts be given specific time in order to approve or not approve? And Jeff and I talked about 90 days, and then I got some feedback from special districts that said, well, the current draft, you know, the current amendments here provide any of the cities the ability to withdraw with a 6-month notice, and that providing special districts with 6 months to decide would then give a special district or multiple special districts time to consider what their options might be. And so, Jeff, maybe you can help me out a little bit.
If it pleases the president, I'll comment on that. Pavo and I talked earlier today, and I said, well, how much is enough time, right? And what are the implications of SB 1383? What are people going to do? So ultimately, the cities are going to adopt the change and the amendment to the JPA, and then special districts have to jump on board or not. But the task associated with them not jumping on board seemed to me to be onerous. So 60 days, 90 days, it doesn't bother me, but I think the CSDs have to make a decision. So Pavo, what do you think?
Well, what's the board think?
Well, I think clearly anybody who'd even contemplate leaving needs a serious time of reflection and a serious time of adjustment. And so in my mind, you need to allow a 6-month period, which is consistent with the withdrawal provision for cities. But Robert, you have your hand raised.
Well, I just wanted to comment that, you know, we just need to have time to run these through our board meetings for approval, and 2 meetings that I would suggest at the most would do it. The only real options here for the special districts would be to go on their own, or the option of going down and joining the county, see if you can get a better deal down there. But I believe that the IWMA is going to be the better option, and I'm anticipating that all the special districts will be able to approve this as well as the cities.
Charles?
Yes, John.
Yeah, I would recommend that we would direct Pavo to attend the CSD meetings somehow, some fashion, to explain, you know, the position of what's happened and, you know, the benefits and plus and minuses. I think it's very important that what I see a problem here is it seems like, and this is what I'm worried about also, with more than one seat. I mean, Robert's got a long history. He knows IWMA. Somebody who doesn't take a whole lot of interest in it may not know or understand where we're going and not make the right decisions, and costing the taxpayers a lot of money in that particular CSD. So I think it might be really important this time around to get Pavo to interject, you know, what we've done and what can happen by staying with IWMA or not. In other words, general managers need to be educated, and I think being in that meeting for that particular subject or topic would be very important.
Jan?
Yeah, what would be the drawback to saying 6 months would be the same period of notice? It seems to me it would be consistent to just treat the special districts the same as as the cities, as their participating agencies. So, Mr. Minery, did you want to address that?
Thank you, President Barbeau, if I might comment. That was exactly the question I asked Pavo today. And really my question is, as far as SB 1383 compliance, what do they have to do? So 6 months to this board, nothing, right? But to them may have implications. So
as far as our action here today, though, we're referring this revised revision to the JPA to the jurisdictions for ratification. The CSDs can ratify it as well as participating agencies. They don't have to wait until every city does it. It just does not right. go into effect until seven cities have done so.
Right.
So if any particular CSD is so dissatisfied that they want to consider leaving, then 6 months is enough time or would be the appropriate time frame to do so, because it's commensurate with what's allowed for the cities. So, but as far as our action, I don't know if we need a separate motion. We've adopted these revisions. So inherently then we're turning it over to the executive director and council to convey it out to the jurisdictions, correct?
Correct.
Correct.
So we don't need further action and we can actually move on to item 10.
Well, look, I just want to confirm that with Mr. Minery, whether or not would you think that any board action would be appropriate at this time for a 6 month grace period, I guess?
No, I think that will be encompassed with the change. So no.
Okay.
Okay then. I think we're ready to move on to item 10. I want to thank everybody for working through this, potentially contentious issue and us reaching a consensus to move forward. So, okay, let's go on to item 10, fiscal year 22-23 budget preview discussion. And I assume that is you, Pavo, or are you going to?
Yes, it is. And essentially what I have in the staff report, I'll cover relatively briefly then lead a board discussion. And it really has two components to it. One is discussing the four budget-related meetings coming up, and then specifically today's discussion on goals and policies. So next slide, Sasha. So this is April meeting, and a lot of these are elected officials. You're kind of familiar with this process that your own agencies go through, but initially there's often a general discussion on goals and policies. That's going to be my next slide. But in May, then staff will bring to you the draft preliminary budget with a whole bunch of numbers in there. And as I mentioned in the staff report, the HF&H fee analysis is still, the driver behind the numbers. But it's going to be in a different format for the preliminary budget. We're developing a format that has multi-year projections. And a better tool for moving forward. But the initial numbers, at least, are going to be reflective of HF&H. With that draft preliminary budget, then in May, any direction from the board on changes would be brought to the June meeting for adoption of the preliminary budget. And the point of emphasis on the preliminary budget is that really establishes the revenue plan and the expenditure plan for next fiscal year. But it doesn't address reserves because we haven't closed out the current year yet. And that's all that's really done in September is that the adoption of the final budget gives staff the ability to close out the prior year, the current year, so we know what the ending reserve numbers are. And then those ending reserve numbers for the current year become the beginning reserve numbers for next fiscal year. And that's really the change that's incorporated into the final budget. Your board's not precluded from changing, the revenue or the expenditure plan in September, but usually that's what we tackle in June with final numbers on reserves in September, as well as, the fund accounting effort of figuring out encumbrances. Encumbrances being money that was authorized in the current year budget, especially under contracts, that automatically roll into the subsequent year if unexpended, because we have multi-year contracts with many different entities. It's you know, very, very common in construction projects, but it's also true for some of our consulting contracts. So final reserves and final encumbrances are addressed in September. And again, I think that's a process that a lot of you are familiar with, your board is familiar with in working with your individual agencies. Next slide. And so this slide simply talks about some of the goals that we have brainstormed here at staff. I hit on a couple of them. Multi-year budget projections are important, but just going from top to bottom, and I mentioned it in the prior item that I was, you know, a little bit surprised on the lack of any real budget policy at IWMA. A little bit surprised, not totally surprised. But the two that do exist were recently adopted, F-13 on reserves. And of course, there was plenty of discussion during the fee analysis on that. And then the fee setting policy, which was also adopted. And in the fee setting policy, there are requirements that relate to the budget because we'll be looking at providing your board with updates on how are the fees, actual fee collections comparing to estimates on a quarterly basis. But now moving into other budget policies, addressing the first two really are the cost of living adjustments and the annual compensation plan, which is pretty standard again during a budget process. So our recommendation is to incorporate those in a budget policy, that those items will be considered by your board as part of the budget. Then, as discussed in the prior item, which was approved, you know, we'll put together budget policies talking about minimum measures, equitable distribution of services, skip a bullet. We also grant revenues and reimbursements from other agencies. In there, though, is also the prohibition on expending funds for enforcement, because that's certainly a policy position that has been discussed and taken by the board. And appropriately, then, it would be incorporated into the budget policy. And then multi-year budget projections, quarterly budget review, pretty standard practices today that would be appropriate in a budget policy. Usually the first quarter budget review, there's not a lot of, you know, variations from the adopted budget, so it's pretty quick. But as we did already with your board, the six-month review tends to be pretty significant. And then the third quarter budget review helps to prep for consideration of the subsequent year's budget. So those are kind of a, you know, pretty standard for multi-year budget projections and quarterly budget review. Also, and concurrently, and we'll talk about this on the next agenda item a little bit more, but a goal for updating the policy on authority to enter into contracts and expend funds, and trying to use shorter words, it's really just a purchasing policy. And so based on work previously, legal counsel has already started drafting a new purchasing policy, and it's been, you know, kind of set aside for the time being. But I certainly believe that that purchasing policy needs to be updated. And when we get to the next item, I think you'll all agree. And then formalizing requirements on requests for proposals, because one of the things that is, you know, an observation just listening to the board member during discussions is the need for program reviews and the need to be able to look at what are our consultants, our independent contractors doing, what kind of metrics should exist to monitor their performance, and how do we, you know, are we satisfied with their performance or are we not satisfied? So formalizing some of the requirements associated with requests for proposals, establishing, you know, quantifiable objectives and metrics and whatnot. The next one on review of fee alternatives is, you know, one that we've already been directed by the board on in doing the fee study. So I think that I don't really need to talk about that one anymore, but not just a percentage, but what a parcel based or looking at how gross revenues are determined were the comments from board members. The second to last one is establishing a model for monthly reporting to the board on regulatory compliance. And so as we're going through SB 1383, we know that we've been developing statistics and we have software that is covering how are we doing on regulatory compliance. And how many more people do we need to work with to help bring them into regulatory compliance? Establishing a model this fiscal year in the near future on what does the board want to see with regard to regulatory compliance. And on that point itself, we're envisioning an approach with our LTF, which is our local task force, and it's the, you know, it's really the individuals of the different agencies who are working on the details. And a contrast between what we might propose to your board versus reviewing with the LTF. And what I mean here is that we have statistics that are both regional statistics and we have community by community statistics. And the general direction that we are thinking of going, and we don't need the board to direct us on this today because it would be subject to future discussions, but is to provide the board with the graphics, whether it's a pie chart or whatever, on how we are doing as part of a scorecard on a regional basis, but not providing the community by community information on your board's agenda, and instead providing the community by community information to the local task force. The reason is that a lot of agencies, when you come to the IWMA, you're a regional board representative of IWMA, you still bring the interests of your community. But at our board level, we're predominantly talking about how are we doing as a region versus at the LTF, if on the staff level, if we're sharing the community by community statistics, then that helps with staff understanding why are we doing better in some communities versus others. Sometimes it's just the difference between the communities. But in any case, what it does provide board members the opportunity to do is when you see the regional compliance statistics, if you're so inclined, then you have the ability to go to your staff members and say, hey, you understand that at a staff level, we're doing community by community, and you have the ability to work with your staff then in understanding how your community is doing in comparison to the region as a whole. And so we've been giving this thought to what's appropriate to share with the board as a whole versus what are the details we want to share with staff, and then facilitating the discussions between individual board members and your separate staff. So that's what we mean in that bullet. Again, I think it's important to be able to get a scorecard together and provide board members updates on how we're doing for regional regulatory compliance and staff at a community by community basis. And then the last one is one that I certainly think is important, and that is developing some sort of an employee training program. It's clear in discussions with everybody here that IWMA has not really had any employee training program. And I think that that's part of the reason why there has been some challenges in the past. As a small organization, individuals have to be able to work independently and successfully for the team. We don't have, the ranks of supervision. We don't have the same, when we have larger organizations and new people come in, the institutional knowledge of the individuals who are already there help to train new staff members. But that doesn't exist at IWMA. And so having some sort of a basic employee training program that focuses in on the individual positions, the traits and the qualities and the strengths of the individuals who are sitting there and the type of training that's important to them, I think is an important goal for the upcoming year as well. So that's what we brainstormed at the staff level. Some of these bullets clearly came from prior board direction, and some of them are pretty standard practices that we see in local government. And with that, I'm certainly open to discussion and questions and other thoughts on goals that the board may have.
Thank you, Pablo. And I think, the staff report also outlines a draft schedule for, as we move towards budget adoption. Does anybody on the board? I see John Hammond has his hand raised.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Pablo, I think it's an excellent layout of goals, especially the measuring sticks, how we're going to meet the state compliance and how are you improving or not improving.
Mike with Specialty Constructions on line two.
Sorry, guys. anyway, with regard to the fact that, you know, we need a measuring stick. You got to know if we're meeting the goals or not, and how can we improve or not. So again, I think that's a good format, a good syllabus there, Pablo, on moving forward with the, you know, policies and goals as such.
Okay. Thank you, John. Do we have any other board comments or questions for Pavo? Jan?
Yes, I just want to agree with John Hammond. I think this is excellent, and it will also help us understand how effective our programs really are when we get those measuring sticks that he's talking about. I think that's really important to have the policy, and then it provides a kind of a grid against which we can measure ourselves, and also it will make decision-making easier. Plus, it includes some safeguards that I think are really important. I love the employee training aspect. I think that's so important. So I'm in favor of this. Thank you.
Thank you, Jan. I do want to clarify, this is not a particular, not an action item. It's just for our discussion and to provide any feedback and guidance if needed to Pablo. Do we have any other board members before we see if there's any public comment? Okay. If not, I got to scroll through. If not, let's see if we have any public comment on this item.
At this time, a member of the public wishes to make a comment. You may press the raise hand button found at the bottom of your screen, or if you're on the phone, you may press star 9. I am not seeing any hand raised for public comment.
Okay, if not, then we, if there's no further discussion, thank you, Pavo, for the presentation. And then we can move on to item 11. RFPs regarding professional services. I believe that's you, Pablo?
Yes. Again, an item that doesn't technically need any action. Let's see, how the background from, you know, my observations is that clearly the board wants to see RFPs on a number of items. And then working primarily with Barbara, I asked, well, what are all the contracts that we have out there? Because it's common, you know, when issues come up for governing boards to focus on certain things in providing general direction. But I also wanted to make sure that we had the broader discussion of the various different contracts that we have, the timing of when we anticipate requests for proposals, and what we don't anticipate is included in the overall direction provided by the board. So next slide, Sasha. This is an awfully, you know, fuzzy budget policy. This is the purchasing policy, or called the contracts and expend fund policy. And so just put it up there because, as mentioned in the previous item, this really needs to be updated. Barbara, you were gonna circle something for me there. Yeah, just on the surface, you know, like a lot of policies, it gives us dollar amount to follow. It shows that between $5,000 and $25,000, we can have something approved by the executive committee, but then the president is only authorized to sign up to $10,000. So there's an automatic, you know, mismatch there, that up to $10,000 probably should be up to $25,000. But again, the policy itself is relatively weak overall. And so, as I mentioned, legal counsel has been working on an updated policy, and we will be bringing it back to your board consistent with our goals. I don't really have anything more to comment on this. Well, it was originally adopted in 1995. So what's that, 27 years later? I think it warrants being back on the board's agenda for some real consideration. Next slide. So we have one of three pages on our existing contracts, and certainly the science discovery ones education and outreach services are on the top of the list. And where we see our priority right now is on the business and multifamily monitoring education. Essentially, that's the SB 1383 compliance requirements. And it's also a very significant dollar amount. But because we're working on SB 1383 compliance and in talking with Kelly York, our program manager, this is the one that she really needs to get out on the street sooner as opposed to later. The school outreach programs, we put that as second priority because of a couple of different reasons. One is clearly the discussions with the board is how might we modify school outreach programs. And I think that's going to take, you know, a couple of discussions with the board. But the other thing is that I'm not hearing any downside if school outreach programs are not implemented the day school opens next school year, that we have time to work on those ones and really make sure that we tailor any of these school outreach programs to meet, you know, the requirements of the regulations as well as to meet the board's pleasures. So that's where we're prioritizing the SB 1383 items over the historical school outreach programs. The next couple don't have, you know, immediate contract termination dates. Our social media consultant, typically that would be something that we would want to do within our purchasing authority and not get into a big RFP because of the relatively, you know, smaller dollar amount for it. And then EcoSLO does public outreach services for us as well in a contract that goes through till 2025. A lot of the non-governmental organizations like EcoSLO will want to come back to the board and talk about what we're doing with EcoSLO. And, you know, it might be part of a performance review even this upcoming fiscal year. But because that existing contract is multi-year, we're not seeing working on that immediately. Under audit and legal services, the green has been completed. Your board recently approved the new audit contract with Brown and Armstrong. Under legal services, I know that that has come up in discussion as well. I generally would recommend going into closed session, doing an evaluation and having a good discussion of what your expectations are on legal service. And so we put a TBD to be determined, but I think that would be the appropriate process if your board wants to go there. County of SLO services, the paying agent where they hold the funds in treasury. The auditor is certainly open, and we've had correspondence with the county on continuing to do that. They seem very agreeable, and we anticipate that being on your agenda consistent with, you know, board direction and everything, hopefully in May. But then there's two others that I think are more questionable, and we haven't actually used them before, but that's where the county human resources department, we have a contract for consulting services or hearing officer services. And a hearing officer services are embedded in the employee handbook in terms of providing employees with an alternate route for grievances, where let's say somebody even had a grievance against me as the executive director. Well, where do they go in order to file their grievance? Currently, it would be to the county's human resources department. And I'm not sure that either those two contracts are viable in the future because of the withdrawal of the county from IWMA. In many of the smaller agencies, when it comes into these types of things, we're really relying on our legal counsel because a lot of the law firms that represent smaller agencies, you know, they have general counsel that comes and advises your board, but they have other attorneys who are well-versed in human resource issues. And so my general inclination is to fall back on the common practice right now of using legal counsel. And always if there's any big HR issue that really comes up that involves legal counsel, then sometimes governing boards will look to special counsel to address bigger issues. But no RFPs right now envisioned. Internet and computer services, I mentioned Civic Plus, staff just went out and we're switching from Civic Plus and moving over to eScribe for our board agenda software. Civic Plus has proven itself to be challenging in many situations, not the best product out there for sure. Comparable dollar amount is eScribe, which was authorized by the executive committee. And one of the drivers there is that eScribe is also used by the city of San Luis Obispo, so that when we do go back to in-person meetings, we're gonna be using the same service that the city is using, which will help facilitate meetings, since we are anticipating using San Luis Obispo City Council. The other ones with regard to board meeting recordings website and those, we just don't have on target for RFPs right now. And those are the types of agreements that would typically be continuing. Out of the payroll benefit and insurance services, we don't anticipate changing paychecks. They are the ones who process all of our payroll. And we do have the ability to work with them on some of the miscellaneous HR services. So we're inclined to try to stay with them. Underneath the rest of the insurance ones, the SDRMA one that I've highlighted in blue is what we really, annually, it's pretty common to get quotes on health and ancillary benefits. Ancillary benefits include things like the employee action plans and some of those other support services that are common for employees. But that one expires at the end of the calendar year. And again, pretty common to go out and, get bids on health insurance and whatnot on an annual basis. Property liability and workman's comp, also common practice, but the expiration of the current contracts isn't for another year. So it's not one of our blue highlighted. Again, blue highlights means that these are our priorities, not that we aren't going to address other issues. And next slide, Sasha. And in here are the two that e-waste disposal and battery recycling are both coming up pretty soon. The e-waste disposal contract is an interesting one because it's almost a no-cost contract. And if your board wants to talk about that, Barbara knows that one better than I do. Technically, it's a date that's coming up, but based on the dollar amount and the other priorities, we put a to be determined on that one, as opposed to establishing that we're going to do it upcoming. And then on the last sheet, well, at this point and beyond, HHW agreements really aren't proposal based. And on the last slide, Sasha, these are agreements that we have with the landfills and the haulers on oil collection services. So again, those are specific services that we're providing or funding to our landfills and haulers to help with implementing some of the services. And again, so in quick summary, the blue ones were the ones that we've highlighted as priorities, with the one, even though the date's coming up, we weren't anticipating going out to bid on that one because it's almost a no-cost contract. And that's kind of a quick run through, but I want to be open to board questions and discussion.
Okay, does any board member have any questions for Pavo? Okay, I'm not scroll through here. Okay, I don't see any. Let's see if any members of the public have any questions, or not questions, have any comments on this.
This time, if a member of the public wishes to make a comment, you would press the raise hand button found at the bottom of your screen. Or if you're on the phone, you may press star 9. I do have one. Okay, Janine, give me 1 second.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead, Janine.
Okay, yes. That I didn't hear any discussion on how the IWMA will address and educate the public on AB 1276, the single-use plastics and accessories. Did I miss it or?
No, but Janine, in the next, in the executive director's verbal report, which is immediately after this item, he does intend to talk about AB 1276.
Thank you. I'll pay attention. Thank you.
Thanks. Okay, thank you, Janine. Any other public comment?
There is nobody else for public comment.
All right, thank you. I'll bring it back to the board. I mean, you know, I think at one point, you know, we had asked for this information. You know, there had been a point in time back last September where we wanted to ensure that we in particular addressed some of our long-term things like the education and outreach contract that had been out there for 20 years and just renewed on an annual basis. That's why that's coming up for RFP. Same logic applied somewhat to legal services that it's been there a long time. But as Pablo noted, we actually probably should have a closed session discussion as an evaluation of our counsel before we would consider doing that formally, and the rest, it's all good to see. I think, you know, Pablo and Barbara have put out a good solid list. It, you know, helps us see how many different contracts we have. A lot of them are routine, annual, but this gives us a good path going forward. So no further comment. We're ready to move on to the executive director's report and discussion of future agenda items.
Thank you, President Bourbeau, and before the non-action discussions, there is a couple of other points that I want to make for your board. So the notice of the fee increase. So Barbara sent out the notice of the fee increase to all the agencies and all the haulers, and also to the companies that have roll-off boxes. And prior to doing so, some of the discussions that I had been involved in, I picked up on a statement that, you know, it's one of those things that somebody said to somebody that said to somebody that we had 7 pages of support for our fee setting action. And I was thinking that somebody who was somebody's knows somebody maybe wasn't following closely enough. So what we did is we compiled a table of contents and documents that support the fee setting that your board approved. And it is over 200 pages. And so the important point of emphasis here is concerns about Prop 218 challenges. And really there's, you know, multiple things in anything, you know, someone might argue a process related challenge or something, but it's this issue about the burden of proof of local agencies to demonstrate that, you know, the fees are appropriate. And I just want to mention to your board, we have 200 pages. And so we put together a table of contents that links all the documents, and we sent it to your agencies so that everybody has that, including industry, on the support behind the fees. I think most everybody knows that Patty Taves has chosen to take separate employment. And so we have a vacant deputy director position as well, but wanted to make sure to mention that. And then moving on to the two quick discussion items. And Sasha, if you could go to the next slide. And so this is a Surf Rider and Clean Seas Lobbying. We'll send this to all your staff. On April 28th, it's having a little webinar on the requirements associated with AB 1276. The truth is that in summary, what is it? It prohibits a food facility from providing any single-use foodware, accessory, or standard condiment as defined to a consumer unless requested by the consumer. And it creates, you know, prohibitions about just putting a bunch of the single-use foodware out there for people to grab and run, and there's prohibitions. You can't have, you know, the spoon and the knife and the fork all in one package. They have to ask for them individually. That's the requirements of, you know, in a nutshell, of 1276. But the second requirement is that by June 1st of each year, counties and cities shall authorize an enforcement agency to enforce this chapter. And just bringing that to your attention, because we know that the direction is that IWMA is not the enforcement agency, and it's really for the individual agencies to choose what the enforcement path is going to be. That's a June 1 requirement. So from our discussions with the LTF, I think individuals are pretty well aware of that. Regarding Janine's comment on our educational programs, you know, we have to develop the educational programs. To put some information in there regarding 1276 really isn't going to cost us any additional funding. And it's through the LTF that, you know, we're developing, and Kelly and the program staff are already working on educational materials, including stickers on cans and the other stuff that's required by SB 1383. So that's the AB 1276 in a nutshell. And then the last item that I wanted to bring to your board's attention is simply the report that came out of February in 2021 regarding the preliminary engineering report for the condition of the foundation of the IWMA office. And bringing it to your attention, because that is going to need to be moved up as a priority on your agenda in the near future. You know, it begs the question of whether or not IWMA will be fixing that building, or whether or not it's more desirable to sell it and find a new place. But we have this lease that President Borbo and I are sitting in right now. Your board extended that through October of this year. There's another extension, which is until April of next year. And so having the path, starting to walk down the path of evaluating whether to keep and repair the building, whether to sell the building and find a different location. You know, this stuff takes time, so we really need to start working on it soon. And so I got together with the structural engineer, and, you know, I asked him a couple of questions, because one is the report does not speak to risks associated with an actual earthquake. And his, you know, verbal response was, it's a single story building. It doesn't have a lot of weight on it. The way it's built with, you know, timber and sticks wrapped with wire and stucco, you know, just verbally again, he didn't see big concerns in terms of an earthquake that hit today. But, you know, the long-term viability, of course, is not great. So the short-term risks felt were relatively short. And so I asked him then, I go, well, what's the recommendation on the next step for IWMA? And he said to get a fit analysis done, which is there's some architects in town. They'll say, how much space do you need? And can we fit them all into that space? It's not uncommon for a structure like this where if it has to get picked up and the foundation has changed, to be able to move some walls around at the same time. But the first question is, can everybody fit into that structure? Because if the answer is no, then that's already kind of an indication of, you know, considering selling it and moving someplace else. So that was my thought, is to first go out and, you know, seek an architect to try to do that fit analysis and then take it from there. The cost estimate of just repairing the foundation for the building doesn't sound too bad at all. It's $50,000 to $100,000. But that excludes a whole bunch of things. You know, it excludes electrical, it excludes plumbing. And we know those costs can start adding up pretty quickly. Plus, we know that the cost of construction has really seen some significant increases in the last year or so during COVID, with material prices going up, and, you know, everybody is conscious of the inflation environment that we're facing right now. So I don't put a lot of trust in the cost numbers. I'm concerned that Ultimately, it may be a lot more expensive than what everybody's anticipating. But then again, if it gets more expensive to repair the foundation, then the viability of seeking out a different location becomes more likely as well. So I wanted to bring that to your attention. Staff has been concerned as they've been seeing some growing cracks in the building. But again, I think that needs to start moving forward in the very near future. And with that, I'll be glad to answer questions.
John Hammond, you have your hand raised.
Yeah, I was gonna ask Pablo on this very thing. Again, we do, IWA did buy this building. It is our building. You mentioned something about a lease. I didn't quite follow that though.
Oh, so the lease of the office that I'm in and the conference room that that we're sitting in right now is just across the alleyway from the IWMA building. And so it's accommodating the increase in staffing that's been approved. But I think it's pretty likely that the existing building can fit everybody. The challenge is conference room, but the offices are really oversized in some ways. And so that's why I think getting an architect involved and saying, hey, can we move walls around? Well, we'd have to do this project anyhow. You know, can we make something that's really going to meet IWMA's needs?
Right.
The next step. Yeah.
So that's just going to be, I was going to throw this out as well. I think right now with the way real estate's going, I think again, truly, if we're going to continue with this agency, we're going to expand. We're going to grow out of the building, no question. I think what might be good though is you might want to get some options for the board to discuss with regard to leasing it out and finding other areas that would be better productive for the staff and overall performance of the agency in a different location. And then maybe do an appraisal on the building too to kind of weigh this all out as a total package of what, you know, the board might want to do. Maybe hang on to it, maybe lease it for a while, and then maybe an option to buy or something. But clearly a lot of the attorneys are looking for these kind of units close to the courthouse. So I think it's pretty valuable that way. So these are options I think that maybe we ought to start exploring instead of, like you say, maybe improving it ourselves, which we do all spend all the money to improve it, and you never know where that's going to end. But on the other hand, we're going to grow out of it. So I think you kind of told us essentially that we need to start looking. And I think, again, with the fact that we do own it, that's a benefit to the agency overall. So this might be things that we need to bring back in the future here pretty soon.
Okay.
All right. Do I see Robert Enns with a hand raised?
Yes,
I do. Go ahead, John. Robert.
I'm just going to show, I agree with John's comments, but I wanted to say that whether you're going to sell it or lease it, I still think you'll need to do the foundation work in either case.
That's Jan? All. Okay, thank you, Robert. Jan?
I agree with those comments as well. I just want to say that I think the option of people sharing offices is also something that could be looked into rather than moving walls around. I mean, like in City Hall, if you go into the clerk's office, you'll see that the people are in their little cubbies and they all basically just are sharing the same spot. And so I have a question whether we need to actually lease that extra room in the Tees House or whether the executive director could move into the office that Patty Taves had earlier, which does need to be a little larger in case there's a group meeting of some kind. But I think other staff could possibly just share space. And there's actually a lot of room there. So please consider the low cost or almost no cost options before leaping into the whole question of selling or moving or all that. Also, if we're going to be using City Hall as a meeting place, it's right across the street, and so you have to think about, you know, that consideration. I just like to wait until we get the whole JPA thing settled and are a little bit more, back in the saddle in our new vision of the IWMA before going forward. Now, I do agree that we should have the foundation work done and have the make sure the building is earthquake proof and stable.
It's very important. Thank you, Jan. We, you know, we can't get too far into this. It's a non-action item on the agenda. You know, we can't really provide too much specific guidance collectively. I did have a question on AB 1276. I don't know if you can go back to the slide about the presentation from the Surf Foundation or whatever it is, Surf Rider Foundation. As it indicates here, and I assume this is accurate, that, you know, local governments are required to authorize an enforcement agency. And as Pablo mentioned, we, you know, had in our strategic plan said the IWMA would not engage in enforcement, but would engage in education. So, and you talked about, you know, adding this as a no-cost thing. I'm assuming that local governments, jurisdictions like as our own, we can, we'll have to authorize ourselves to do enforcement, but we would authorize the IWMA to do the education and outreach for it, right? Something along those lines. Sure. Yeah, okay, got it. Okay, thank you. Now, that covers our agenda items, but we do have a closed session to go into. So we're going to have everybody who's not a board member depart, other than Jeff Minnery as our legal counsel, is gonna, Pablo's gonna depart and the rest of the staff. Are we going to get invited into a separate closed session? We're just going to have everybody else leave the leave this meeting per se.
President Bo, if I may, I don't see that we've taken public comment, but before we schedule that, everybody will leave, and then we will, and then I'll lock the meeting for you.
Yeah, I don't know that we take public comment on your oral report. I guess.
You can.
I guess while we can, let's just see if anybody else is out there wants to make a comment on our on the executive director's report.
My apologies. I actually meant for closed session.
Closed session.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Good point. Yes. The closed session is regarding an executive director.
So President Barbeau, if I might, why don't we just take public comment on the report and the closed session pursuant to Government Code 54957, public complaint, the executive director, take public comment on all things at once, if there
sure.
is any.
Sounds good. So if anybody has any public comment regarding the executive director's report or our upcoming closed session item, now is the time.
Okay, so at this time, if a member of the public wishes to make a comment, you may press the raise hand button found at the bottom of your screen, or if you're on the phone, you may press star 9. And I did see, Janine, that your hand was raised for a minute. So I'm going to go ahead and allow you to talk.
Thank you. I just want to reiterate or reinforce that I'm quite distressed that your board has taken the position to not address the polystyrene ordinance that we worked on for, in this county, 8 years, and that you all are members of your five of our cities have a good ordinance, well, and that your board has chosen not to recognize that effort. And so that's what I wanted to leave you with. Thank you.
Thank you, Janine. I'm going to make sure that the website has been updated to reflect that the ordinance is an active ordinance, because at one point, you know, it erroneously indicated that it was still suspended, and that's not the case. Okay. All right. Well, then. That's it for public comment. We will go ahead and enter into closed session.
So, President Barbeau, I'd just like to let the public know that I think we should report out on public comment at on the website if there's any action or at the next meeting.
Yes. Thank you, Mr.
I believe we're closing out after this.
Yes, because after this, we are adjourning the meeting.
Yes.
And President Barbeau, if you can report to me the closing time.
Yes. Thank you for the reminder.
Thank you.
Okay, so with this, it looks like we just have Barbara and Sasha to drop off, and then we will turn it over to Jeff.
I just need to kick out the attendees, and I will lock it. And I will move